Everybody, welcome again to Cedar Ridge. My name's Matthew, I'm the lead pastor here, so thank you so much for being here. We've got quite a day planned. You probably see things set up around us here. We've got our ministry fair today, which is a day where we kind of celebrate what we do together as a community. Lots of things going on that some of them are tucked away behind the scenes, some of them are more obvious, but you'll get to see after the service. You can just browse around and see all the different things that are going on. And then also we have an opportunity to sign up and get involved in different things. So, you know, it's a wonderful way to make connections, get more deeply connected to this community, and a great way to serve. And the theme for this morning is serving. We've got this sort of season, really, September into October, where there's a lot of serving opportunities, which is a really wonderful thing. And that sort of culminates in many respects. We'll talk about some other opportunities at the end of the service, but it culminates in our harvest festival. You know, we've been farming all through the summer and spring, wonderful harvest coming in, giving that away to people in need. And then on October the 5th, we're going to celebrate with our annual Harvest Festival. And it's kind of become almost like a flagship event for us. We had 800 people from our local community on our property last year. So, you know, wonderful opportunity to serve the community and just sort of share God's love with people. It takes a lot of work. So I wanted to sort of give you a heads up before we even talk about any of the other opportunities later on. If you could home in on the Harvest Festival table after the service, or go online and look at the sign-up opportunities there, really helps us to plan ahead with that event, because it is so big. It helps us to plan ahead by knowing who's available when and how and what and all the rest of it. You can imagine organizing an event like that is challenging. So that's one opportunity I would say. Let's all hands on deck. Let's all come out and support it. Enjoy it, you know, attend and enjoy it. Bring friends and family. But also, let's put the work in that it needs to pull it off. So if you could sign up ahead of time, that would be really helpful to us. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking about servanthood today. We're in a series called God Quest, where we're kind of taking this, I daren't say light-hearted approach, that perhaps is a little too frivolous, but we're taking this game approach to the whole idea of experiencing God. You know, maybe considering laying aside for a moment the sense of struggle and challenge and at times the chore it can feel like to tend to our spiritual lives, our spiritual journeys, and kind of just jumping in and taking it as an adventure, not worrying too much about outcomes, and enjoying the process. And we have some material that's available on the outside. Kudos to Ruth. Ruth came up with this great concept of the game, right? And she has put this some really great material together, which I really encourage you to check out. Grab a copy, hard copy. You can download it online. There's a tracker you can download as well to sort of keep track of this sense of awareness and noticing God's presence, perhaps when we've not noticed it before. Download that and track along, and you know, you'll see there's some things to focus on for this week in particular. I'm doing that. I had another great experience this week out on our property, just watching some dragonflies, and just had a sense of a really deep sense of God's presence. And I just want to say thank you to, like, just put your hand up if you work on our property, if you help keep our property in order. I know there's a few sheepish hands going up. Let's give those people a round of applause, right? And we have a phenomenal property out there. It's just beautiful every time of the year in different ways. This is the great thing about doing the ministry fair. Like, a lot of that stuff is hidden behind the scenes. You can go to that table afterwards and find out more about what it takes to upkeep this property and just some of the wonderful things that go on there. Anyway, back to today. So we're talking about engaging with the mission. That's the theme for today. And I'm going to give you sort of the sort of jump ahead and say, really, our concept of mission here is serving. Like, serving is the mission, right? Now, we talk a lot about servanthood here, so I don't really want to spend too much time trying to define what servanthood is or talk about all the different ways that that you can serve. There'll be an opportunity about to look at that afterwards. But maybe just sort of back away from this concept that we are very familiar with and we talk about a lot, and just look at it perhaps from some different angles to give us a different perspective, perhaps a perspective where we might be able to notice God's presence more and experience God more through serving, perhaps even serving in the ways that we're very used to and in ways that have perhaps become a little mundane. Let's just go back to last week. We talked last week about this whole concept of God, looking at God in perhaps a slightly different way. We talked about God is, like God just is, rather than and thinking about God as being itself rather than necessarily a being. I think a great scripture that kind of probes this concept is in the ancient Hebrew scriptures. In Exodus chapter 3, verse 14, it says, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. In other words, the sort of self-definition of God, and obviously we have a very personal concept of God here because God's having a conversation with Moses, right? But the self-definition of God is beyond personhood. It's a verb as opposed to a noun. It's I am. I'm being. Being is sending you. And so if we go back to that previous slide, what we talked about last week is that being is love. God is love. We saw that from the scriptures. So God is being, God is love. And then that being is present in everything. Right, that being is present in everything. And the good news we talked about in terms of our experience of God or our quest to experience God is that we are part of that everything. So we are in this thing called God. So maybe God is more present than we realize. And there's a beautiful scripture in Acts chapter 17 where Paul is this sort of early, in the early struggle of the church, and Paul is one of the key leaders there. And he goes to Athens and he's sort of debating with some of the philosophers there, and he sees this shrine to the unknown God, you know, like the mystery of God, if you like. And it seems like they, even back then, they had this sense that, you can't really define God. God's this mystery. And he says this, God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far away from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as some of your own poets have said. We are his offspring. So there's this, you know, he's quoting Greeks, but he's basically saying we have our being in God's being. We are somehow in God. And that's, I think, a beautiful thing for us to take into this series and into this whole year of this adventure, this God quest, this adventure of experiencing God. Now, that begs a couple of questions, though, right? So, actually, it begs about a million questions, right? I don't feel like I'm answering too many of them, you know, in making some of those kinds of statements, perhaps suggesting there's another way to look at things. But it begs, I think, at least a couple of questions. First one is, what about a personal connection to God then? If God is being, if God sounds very impersonal, what about a personal connection to God? And maybe as a sort of side of, you know, a part B of that question, you might ask, does Matthew have a personal relationship with God? Well, let me say, yes, I do, actually, just to, put that out there. I would go as far as to say I have a personal relationship with Jesus. I talk to Jesus all the time, which would put me, for people like Richard Dawkins would put me in the camp of a delusional person, you know, maybe someone who thinks he's got an imaginary friend. But for me, that's transcending the reality that we're in to make a connection with someone else, Jesus, who also transcends that reality. So I feel I have a very personal connection and a personal connection to God, and I think it's possible for all of us to have a personal connection to God because we are persons, right? We experience pretty much all of life personally. We mentioned last week, we experience God personally through incarnation. Incarnation being Jesus, the fullness of God. Incarnation being this physical reality we experience, the beauty of it. And incarnation being me. I am an incarnation. So we experience God, we interact with God, whatever God is, in a very personal way. And we start using metaphors that are very personal. Jesus used one, Father, which is a really helpful metaphor most of the time. Sometimes that can be a tricky metaphor, depending on our experience of parenthood or fatherhood, right? Other metaphors, other female metaphors are used for God. All sorts of different metaphors are used for God that have a very personal connotation. All I'm saying is that's not the only way to experience God. We can experience, have another kind of experience of God that is less personal. If you remember my experience on the beach I talked about last week, when I was talking about how I felt connected to the universe in its sort of largeness and its smallness, that connection, to me, felt very personal, But at the same time, somehow myself kind of dissolved into something much bigger and much more beautiful. That wasn't a sort of a taking away of myself, an abusive thing. It was a beautiful thing. It felt like a release. It felt like a sense of coming home in some sense. So that sort of more, that transpersonal, if you like, experience of God is something we can experience as well. And it means that we don't necessarily start pinning humanoid characteristics onto this mystery of God. So perhaps it's inappropriate to say things like God plans or causes or schemes, or, you know, we use those terms in the kind of way that we as humans think about those things, in very cause and effect types of ways. Maybe that's not the appropriate language to talk about God. And that kind of gets to this second question, I think, that it begs, that if God is in everything, does that mean that everything's good? Right? And, you know, is Matthew just this sort of optimist who turns a blind eye to the fact that there are some harsh realities in life? There are some things about life that really do not seem good. And let me say, I absolutely see that, experience that myself. You know, right now, in my own personal experience, I have two people that I desperately love, deeply love, people very close to me, who, for them right now, suicide is a more attractive offer frequently than staying alive. And that there's darkness to that that is unspeakable, right? And we go through situations. I've been through situations myself. I have failed abysmally. I've done bad things. I've had bad things happen to me. We experienced that personally. We, you know, put on the internet, look at the news, pick up a newspaper if we still do that kind of thing. We don't need any persuading that it's not all unicorns and rainbows and unicorns, right? Life is not a bed of roses. So I want to just home in on that little bit for a moment, so that, because I think that gives us a key into, a way into talking about engaging with the mission. We've said that God is love, right? God is love. And yet, there's things that don't seem like love. Could it be that somehow in that anti-love, let's say, you know, and like love is happening, love is the way of the universe, like love, if you like, is the natural frequency, the natural vibration, the natural wavelength of the universe. I'm using certain metaphors there, right? That please don't take me literally on that one. But if that's the case, and I believe that's so, there is the opposite of that, right? It's not, love isn't always getting its way. There's anti-love, and what we tend to call anti-love, fear, right? Fear leads to withdrawal, it leads to separation, to alienation, to competition and conflict and violence and hatred. It leads all the way to a lot of the situations that we experience in our own lives and in the world in general. Could it be that somehow, in all of that, God is still present, or perhaps it's that God somehow holds all that darkness as well. So not so much necessarily that God's in that darkness, but that darkness is somehow contained by God. The scriptures, I think, probe that concept as well frequently. And one example of that is in Psalm 139, verse 8. If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, and that word there in the Hebrew is Sheol or hell, it's the underworld, it's the dark world, you are there. So there's this sense that God somehow holds all this stuff, right? God's being is not oblivious to darkness either. And I think we can identify that, and I think we mentioned this a little bit last week, but I think we can identify that in that somehow it's in the darkness, it's in the anti-love that we ironically, paradoxically, really learn what love is. And let me explain what I mean by that. I have done terrible things. If we had long enough this morning, I'd list them off for you, but I'm not going to. Just take my word for it. I've done some really bad things. Somehow through that, that's how I've learned what forgiveness is. Because I've experienced forgiveness. I've experienced grace, and it's caused me to love more. Jesus said, those who have forgiven much, love much. So it's somehow in that brokenness, it's in that darkness, that we get this deeper experience of love, this deeper experience of God. When bad things happen to us, and I'm in no way condoning or saying, isn't it great that terrible things happen? Because terrible things are happening right now on this planet. And you may be walking through terrible situations. And yet we also know that it's in those struggles, those difficulties, that we come to the end of ourselves, or we experience perhaps the help of somebody else, or we have this deeper understanding of what love is and life is. And perhaps it's at times in the absence of love that we connect with love, because we realize how much we long for it, and how precious it is, and how we need to take care of those we do have around us, and take care of ourselves and things like that. I think you can probably relate to what I'm talking about here, that somehow the paradox is that if life is just rainbows and unicorns, I'm not sure that we get to fully experience life. I can't really explain that one away. It just is, right? It's a little bit like saying God is. That's part of our being. That's part of our existence. That's part of our experience. Now, I don't think, therefore, we should just step back and say, oh, isn't it great that bad things happen? In fact, that's where the mission kicks in. So my attempt to try and define the mission of God Quest, this game, this adventure that we're on to experience God, it would be to say, the mission is healing and reconciliation. Right? Our mission is really to respond to that anti-love, to that fear, to that darkness. That's what we've been called to. A scripture we looked at last week that relates to that was in the first chapter of Colossians. It talks a bit about Jesus. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So that's, you know, we talked about that kind of stuff last week. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. So what we have here is the mission, God's mission, if you God's purpose, the purpose of life, if you like, is the reconciliation of all things. We also get a little cue here that it's to do with shed blood on the cross. Now, lots of different ways of interpreting that, but it seems like it's connected to sacrifice, right? It's connected to love. This reconciliation of all things, there's a loving cost to it. But that's the purpose, the divine purpose, if you like. And we're called to that same purpose. So if we look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5, it says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old is gone, the new is here. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. Right? So we have this ministry of healing and reconciliation. We are engaged in the greatest adventure in the history of the universe, unless there's life somewhere else and we haven't found out about it and they've got a better one. But this is what we got, right? We have the greatest adventure, the healing and reconciliation of all things. That means at a personal level, at a national level, at a societal level, at a global level, the healing and reconciliation of all things. That's the flow of love in the universe. That's where God's being is going, if you like. It's where it's come from and where it's going and what it is. And we are part of that. Now, what does it look like? Okay, so what does healing and reconciliation look like? I think we have, from those scriptures even that we just read there, I think we have a great cue. It's incarnation. That healing and reconciliation looks like Jesus, right? It looks like loving your enemies, forgiving those who persecute you. It looks like turning the other cheek. It looks like standing up for justice. It looks like working through conflict to resolution. It looks like patience and compassion and kindness when you feel like you've almost run out of it. Like, it looks like Jesus. It looks like the way of Jesus. And so we are so privileged in that when we want to look at this mystery of God, as followers of Jesus, we say, look at Jesus. Because Jesus is the fullness of God, the fullness of love, incarnate, lived out for us. And we're trying to live that same way, right? That's who we're following. So it looks like Jesus. I think we get a great description of this in Paul's letter to the Philippians in chapter 2. Let's look at these two things first. Sorry. Let's think about this love thing. Okay, so when Jesus, we want to follow the way of Jesus, right? We see Jesus as the fullness of love, and what love looks like. That love has to be experienced, right? If we want to engage in the flow of love, if we want to engage in healing and reconciliation, we have to experience that. It's like the task for us, the mission in God Quest, is not just to go around healing this, healing that, reconciling that, you know, and sort of getting in everybody else's business, if you like. It's to flow in love. It's to both experience love, healing and reconciliation, and to give it away, to share in it. It's like you can't have one without the other. Let's look at these couple of scriptures from John. We looked at this one last week as well. We're looking at all these scriptures here in a different light to how we did last week. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. So we get that flow there. Love comes from God, and then we love. And if we're not loving, then maybe we haven't received love. We're not in the flow of it. Later on in the same chapter, the writer says, we love because he first loved us. So that's we're receiving love in order to love. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. So we have the interconnectedness of this love, right? If we want to be like Jesus, if we want to, we think about what does healing and reconciliation look like? Well, it looks like Jesus. To experience that, to live that, we have to both receive love. So if we think about God Quest, this adventure we're on, we need to experience love ourselves in order that we can give that love away. We can share that healing and reconciliation with others. And it has a very practical application. You know, we love your brother and sister. Jesus, of course, in Matthew 22, sort of nailed this one by saying, you know, people say this to him, what's the greatest commandment? Well, he says, well, love God. You can read it up there for yourself. And love your neighbor as yourself, right? The whole, all of truth, all reality hinges on these two things. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, it's not just about receiving love and reflecting that back to God. It's like, you know, I have this personal connection with God and we're kind of okay. But no, love needs to flow through us if we're to truly experience love. It needs to flow through us into the world, into others, into other people's lives. And we begin then to see other as self. Love your neighbor as yourself. There becomes less of that alienation sort of begins to disappear to the point where it's like, I'm loving you like you are me. I mean, I think that's perhaps what that is hinting at there, where the separation between us is just taken away. So we want to love like Jesus, right? We want to embody that like Jesus. And Jesus, let's get back to that scripture we were going to look at in Philippians chapter 2. By the way, next series, we're going to do a study of the book of Philippians. We'll sort of break this one open a little more. But this is a fairly famous passage and one that we've talked about here. But let's think about this in terms of, okay, so we want to be like Jesus, want to look like Jesus. Here's what Paul's saying. Therefore, if any of you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, this sense of oneness, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ, Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him a name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow. And this language starts sounding very much like the supremacy of Christ that we talked about in, or read about in Colossians 1, right? every knee shall bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. That's the sense of the Christ being in everything, the fullness of everything, and everything being in the Christ. But what we have here really is the way of Jesus. It's servanthood. So this whole mechanism of healing and reconciliation comes about through the consciousness, the mindset of putting others first. That's what I think we have here. If we were to sort of try to boil down what Jesus was about, Jesus is about putting others first. And that is the definition, in my view, of servanthood, right? Servanthood, then, is not just doing stuff. It's very much about doing stuff, right? Action, practicality, right? And we have some of that there. Jesus being obedient, even to death. I mean, there's a sort of harsh practicality to that, of sacrifice. But there's a consciousness here, right? He says, have the same mind as Christ, have the same approach, the same demeanor as Christ. And I think that's essential to us as we think about servanthood, and especially as we think about experiencing God through servanthood, experiencing God through serving. Really, what I'm saying is, to engage with the mission of God Quest, we need to serve. That servant-heartedness is love in action, right? It's healing and reconciliation in action. And it happens as we experience God's love and as we give God's love away. It has a very practical application. But it comes through, the experience comes through a changed consciousness, a different way of looking. And that consciousness, I think, is vital. Because let me give you three reasons why I think it's vital. First one is, we could be serving and doing stuff with actually a kind of resentful attitude, right? If we're just doing stuff out of chore, out of a sense of, oh, it's got to be done, and there's nobody else is doing it, whatever, you know, we end up being resentful. It comes from somewhere other than that Christ consciousness. It comes from, and we don't experience God through that. I don't think we experience God. Give you an example of that. I was driving last year, driving through Massachusetts, pulled off to get a cup of coffee. I bet you we've all had experiences like this. And I went into the. It was a Starbucks. I went in there, and I said, "Could I get a dark roast pour over?" I confess, I'm a bit of a coffee snob. I don't particularly like the stuff out of the, you know, the tap, because you don't know how long it's been sat there, right? That's part of the thing. So the person behind the barista goes, "Oh, we've got dark roast already brewed." So I said, "Yeah, I know, but would it be possible to get a pour over? Because it's on the menu." I didn't say that, you know. And they went like this. So I said, "Sorry, is that a problem?" And they said, "Well, it's just stupid because we've got cold brew. We've got dark roast all brewed already." The word "stupid" kind of was a bit of a trigger for me. And let me say, I was not in healing and reconciliation. I wasn't vibrating with the universe in that way. But we've all experienced that kind of servanthood, right? We've all experienced, whether it's people who are being paid to serve, but we maybe have experienced it in other situations or other relationships too. And I don't think that person was having an experience of servanthood, and nor was I. Here's another reason. I think we need to have this sense of the Christ consciousness. And it's because perhaps the biggest way we can serve in our lives or with our lives is through how we live. It's our demeanor in everyday life. It's the way we interact with people in everyday life, rather than just specific serving opportunities, projects, right? And so if you're anything like me, there are many times situations where I'm not treating somebody in a servant-hearted kind of way, even though it doesn't require servanthood. It's not a serving project or something like that. It might be an interaction, like an interaction with that person I just described with, or perhaps in some of our closest relationships where our brokenness and our darkness, you know, the ways in which actually we may not feel loved or haven't been loved, come through. Whenever we interact with somebody, you think about this for a moment, whatever interaction it is, that person is potentially subject to our lifetime of lack of love. or love, right? But we've all grown up in families, we've all been to schools, we've all worked jobs, we've all had friendships and relationships that have caused us less than positive things, right? So we're all to some degree, and I use this word carefully, victims of our past. And we've all grown up with stuff in our lives because of what has happened to us. Most of that is probably not our fault whatsoever. But we have a choice, really, when we interact with people, of doing to others how others have done to us, to misquote Jesus, or to do to others how we want them to do to us. And I have spent most of my life, I think, unconsciously just doing to others what has been done to me, because I haven't been aware enough, or I haven't had this consciousness clearly enough of, oh, I need to adopt a different way, a different approach to life. I need to address my own healing and reconciliation. I need to work at myself with the help of others and therapists and things like that, so that I can be a better person, a better contributor to life, someone who can flow more in love in life, rather than flow more in fear. And so whenever I interact with somebody, there's this weight of history behind. And most of the time, I filter that, right? I hold it back. But sometimes it seeps through. And sometimes, you know, when I'm really riled, it just comes over the barriers like a tidal wave, right? I think we've all experienced that. So with this Christ consciousness, not only can we serve out of a spirit of love, but we can also recognize servanthood as a way of life. It's being a better person. Perhaps the biggest contribution we can make is to work at ourselves. And that leads to the third point. The third reason, I think, for really seeking this different consciousness is because love is difficult. Love is a struggle. It's really hard to love when you're not loved back. Right, and I think for many of us, and I include myself in this, we start out on this love journey, if you like, with really we're seeking love. We want to be loved, right? You think about your closest relationships, your partners, your best friends. We start out loving because we just desperately want to be loved back. What happens when you don't get loved back? Do we just walk away? I mean, is there a way to love through that and beyond that where it's not about us? We're putting that other person first. And I feel like I've been alive 53 years now, and I am only just beginning to learn what love really means. And so this sense of Christ consciousness takes us on this adventure of even plumbing the depths of what actually is love. And I think it's the kind of love the world needs is only going to be possible as our consciousness changes. And we see that in certain people. So I've just talked about a very personal situations where that happens in our relationships. But you think of someone like Dr. Martin Luther King. To prevail when he's loving towards justice, right? But to prevail when so much hatred is thrown back at you, and not to resort to treating others how you're being treated, but to treat others as you would wish to be treated. To prevail in that kind of onslaught requires a level of consciousness, a level of experience that far outweighs anything I personally have experienced, quite honestly. But I want to. I want to seek after that. And that's, I think, what the world is crying out for. So with this consciousness, if we can think about servanthood as the healing and reconciliation of all things, we can perhaps begin to see the things we do, things that we do already, our relationships, but also our serving tasks, right? The practical things we do in our jobs, in our families, things we do at church, things we do as volunteers. We can see them as being part of something so much bigger, part of a much bigger adventure. They could perhaps not just be a chore or something where, oh, we've got to do it, you know. We there is that practicality and that determination to it. But we could see them as, oh, this is part of flowing in the Spirit of Christ. This is part of healing and reconciliation of all things. Perhaps we can, that's with things we're doing already. Perhaps we can look at new opportunities. And as I mentioned today, we've got opportunities after the service to look at, experience new opportunities to serve. There are things that need doing in this community. There are things that need doing in the world. That are wonderful opportunities that aren't just tasks, but are part of something much bigger, the healing and reconciliation of all things. Now, I wanted to bring a few people up. A few people this morning are going to share with us about ways that they have served, some in the context of Cedar Ridge, some outside of that. And they're just going to share how they have served and experienced God through serving. Because the whole point of this is that we would see our servanthood in a different light. Would see it as an experience. So Rory's going to come up first. So let's welcome Rory. She's going to share for a few minutes with us.
Thank you, Matthew. Good morning, all. I think building upon Matthew's points of experiencing service is probably, for me, foundational here at Cedar Ridge. I would say my desire to serve first has become because I've experienced service, particularly in my D group, and I would like to acknowledge Pat and Dave Martinson. Their patience, their persistence, and their love for each and every one of us every Thursday night in our D group has created a sense of connection and community for us within Cedar Ridge and within our own little D group community. And so that's helped me to desire to, you know, serve others. And so I serve here at Cedar Ridge as co-chair with Sarah Clark for the Race and Reconciliation team. And I arguably say that our mission here within Cedar Ridge and really for the church and our community at large is really to seek to understand, to reconcile, and even, dare I say, to heal the divisions of race and brokenness of racism within our own, within ourselves, within our communities, and even within our country and our world. And to be a co-chair of this committee has certainly required a lot of patience, persistence, and love, because talking about issues of race, both the brokenness within ourselves, certainly within our families and our communities, and certainly in our country and our world, requires patience, persistence, and love. But those three things help us to establish a larger connection to a larger movement, whether it's with Mohandas Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Black Lives Matter, and even the movements of consciousness that we're seeing throughout our country. But it all starts with ourselves and within this community of love here at Cedar Ridge. And so in this experience, both as I receive it in D group, as I serve through our Race and Reconciliation team, I experience it through the taste of reconciliation as we do work, whether we are trying to do work through engaging in our schools, through the Paint Branch Cluster, certainly with Rachel Anderson and Melinda Anderson. They're not sisters, but they are collaborating and trying to talk about racial equity within the Paint Branch Cluster. And so I welcome you to talk to see them after during the ministry fair, but also just even as we organize events, whether it's a challenge group on race and reconciliation, whether it's a book club, and the different activities that our team seeks to help, again, engage ourselves and engage one another and engage our community. So, again, thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Cedar Ridge, for the opportunity to both do this work, because I've never been able to experience consciousness about race and the divisions of brokenness in a church community. And so, again, this is a way to serve and to love both myself and other people. So thank you.
Hi, I'm John Evans, and I guess what I'll share will be fairly different from what Rory shared. I serve in a couple of different ways here at Cedar Ridge. Most notably, back there at the sound booth, I'm one of three audio engineers that are, I guess, a kind of a hidden but important part of what happens, of most of what happens here on Sunday mornings in particular, where every string that's plucked, every syllable uttered here sends a signal back to the back of the room, and then we get to decide how much of it, of each signal, will come out of these loudspeakers and gets distributed on the stage. So it's a role that has some power, some influence, but we try to use that power for good, and not to necessarily impress anyone or to get anyone necessarily excited, but really to empower the voices, the music, the videos, to reach hearts and minds as effectively as possible. And so that comes out in a variety of ways. I could get into all kinds of examples, but I think probably my favorite example is when we have our youngest readers on All Ages Sundays or special events. I think I get a special thrill from having to bring the microphone way down And hearing these young, very young voices ring out through the room and be heard very clearly. It doesn't always work perfectly, but when it does, it's really a thrill to hear these very young voices who've only been speaking for maybe 3 years lead us in worship, not just be a cute presence on stage, but really lead us all in worship effectively, thanks to, you know, the technology. It's really great. And it kind of reminds me of that old prophecy, I guess, in Isaiah about, you know, the lion shall lie down with the lamb and a little child shall lead them. And it's great to be to participate in making some of that more tangible, I guess. And speaking of little kids, I also help out some Sundays over in the Cedar Ridge Kids Elementary Sunday School. And it gets a little rambunctious in there sometimes, but it's great to be a participant again in helping to shape these kids over multiple Sundays, grow in their confidence that they're loved by God, by their community, that their choices matter, and a bunch of other things. And a third thing I thought I would highlight that I've put a fair bit of energy into in the last couple of years is the outdoor movies we put on. I've really enjoyed making those the best they can be. It's great to take a simple office projector, wheel it out onto the grass, shine a beautiful, huge picture right on the side of our perfectly white barn, wire up some speakers and fill the barn with color, fill the space with sound. And in that particular moment that I especially love is in those 20, 30 minutes after official sunset when it gets dark enough to show the picture, but the sky is still full of color. It's just a really thrilling moment there. And I like to think of, I like to think of God kind of smiling down on us and his presence being felt just through the beauty of the setting and the shared community gathered in sort of kind of typically a smile spreads across my face as I kind of picture that. So, three examples. Thank you.
So I'm Kelly Strube, and for me, service is strongly linked to experiencing God among other people. And so what I'd like to do is first tell you a little bit of my background and then how that's connected to serving at Cedar Ridge. By the time I was 9 years old, my parents had divorced, reunited, and then split up again when I was nine. So my mother and I were alone. She was pretty desperate and fragile, and a family we knew through Girl Scouts invited us to a prayer meeting. So we went down to Georgetown to this Catholic charismatic prayer meeting and entered this classroom filled with like 50 to 100 people, and they were all just greeting each other and so happy to see each other like long-lost family. And as a nine-year-old, the level of love and joy and just that feeling in that room was something I hadn't experienced before. And so I was intrigued and really liked it. And then they started to sing. So it's the 70s, there are guitars and tambourines, and they're all singing these songs. And so I'm paying attention to the words because I hadn't heard anything like this either. And God and Jesus and Lord. And it kind of just came to me sitting there that this experience that I was in, and it really felt crystal clear, this is God. This is what God is. And it was, for me at nine, very profound, and it was the beginning of a huge change in my mother's and my life. And so now, fast forward many years to Cedar Ridge, now here, and I have the joy of serving with the Care Circle, working with Cedar Ridge Kids, and on the communion team. And through all those, they're all strongly connected to knowing God through connection to other people. So I feel like that's been one of the ways I've really experienced God is through that connection. And just for an example from Care Circle. Care Circle is part of the Congregational Care Team. And the Congregational Care Team prays for people, sometimes sends cards, prepares meals, visits people. When I pray for people and I know what people are going through and I just take a minute to stop worrying about my day and think about a person that I know and pray, and I really feel connected to them in that moment, and also connected to God. And that's been a meaningful part of service for me, is the connection. So as Matthew said, after the service, you know, one of the tables is a congregational care table. Feel free to stop by if you want to talk to us. And that's kind of my background on service. So thank you.
Hello. My name is Johannes Ford. I've been here at Cedar Ridge working and serving with the youth for years and years. And I think many of you know that. When I was asked to talk about service here at Cedar Ridge and how I experience God through service, I immediately thought about not how I experience God through my service with the youth, which I've been doing for quite a while, but how I experienced God when I was being served as a youth many years ago here at Cedar Ridge. I had lots of great leaders here at Cedar Ridge when I was young. Leaders that taught me a lot about God. I still remember those leaders to this day. I remember Madoff, who used to put in work on the basketball court, and Dwayne, who always had really funny impressions, and Marty, who had wonderful jokes. And Steve Audie, who might be back there somewhere today, and his wife Trish, who still works with the youth here at Cedar Ridge. So what I have to share is just a story. It's a simple act of service. It was a ride, right? It was just a ride. I remember I was in high school, probably my sophomore or junior year, and Steve Shandy drives over to my place in Lanham and picks me up. He picks a couple of other guys up from another town over, and he drives us to a football field, and we meet a couple other Cedar Ridge high school students and a couple leaders, and we play football. We have a great time. And afterwards, Steve comes back and picks us up. And I say drop off and pick up because Steve didn't stay. Steve would normally stay, but Steve was an adult. And he had kids, and he had to run errands. And I now know what that's like to have a Saturday where you're just running around and busy. I noticed that, right? Steve would normally stay. He would normally play with us. He threw a really mean spiral, and he always had this knack for finding me deep, like in the end zone. It was great. But that stuck with me because it was such a selfless act, and I felt really cared for by that simple act of service. And after a while, I realized what I was experiencing was God's love for me, and it really touched me. It's something that, you know, literally 25 years later, I still think about. And when I think about service and experiencing God, I often think back to that simple ride, and I think about it when I'm called, or when I think about ways that I can help serve others. It doesn't have to be complicated or trying. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Sometimes just doing a little bit can go, you know, a long way. And I think about how, you know, just a little bit can help others experience God. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. So we're going to move into time of communion now.